I'm Steve Schrag. I work for 1199 SEIU, and we have a hazardous materials program under the program that Debbie talked about. In that program, we do hazardous materials awareness for our members. We do training around confined space hazards, as well as first receiver patient decontamination training. We receive supplemental funding to do work around follow-up to Hurricane Sandy. We represent a lot of workers in New York and actually in all the states that were affected by Sandy. But we decided that what we were going to do was a little different. We weren't going to be doing training around muck and gut, which somebody else will talk about. We were going to be doing training with our members about resiliency, and that is getting both our workplaces and our communities better prepared and better able to bounce back from the next disaster. This is crucial in healthcare, because if workers don't come to work, there's not going to be any health care. So if they don't have their families taken care of, if their facilities aren't in a good position to respond, there won't be any health care provided for the people who are victims of the disaster. Health care facilities are required to do this. They're required to do this under OSHA regulations. They're required to do it under Joint Commission. But like lots of things, just because it's required doesn't mean it's going to happen. And many, many healthcare facilities are not adequately prepared for the next disaster. There were lots of facilities in New York that nursing homes that couldn't keep track of patients. They couldn't figure out how to evacuate people. They couldn't figure out where to put them. And in addition to that, our members were also facing serious challenges where they lived. And so we decided that this is the way that we're going to approach this. And I'm going to not read any of these. I'm going to let you look at them. And these are quotes from our members who faced challenges both where they work and where they lived, and both in terms of getting resources and in unique kind of ways. They also had to deal with lots of problems associated with taking care of their clients. Lots of our home care members ended up going into situations that were quite treacherous for them and had to stay there for a long time. They had to find ways to be creative to get resources needed to take care of themselves and their clients while they were doing it. And then they faced the problems at home. And like lots of other disaster workers in this case, they had to make sure that their families were taken care of. And in many cases, their families faced the same challenges as their clients did. And it was quite a challenge. We heard stories. We did a disaster resiliency training for 130 of our home care workers, and we got countless stories of what people faced. I'm not sure there's any good way to do resiliency for that tree. I faced the same problem in my own yard. But the fact is that if workers are worried about their family, it's going to be harder for them to take care of their patients. And in terms of resources, again, it comes planning. And the fact is that I've done countless of these workshops when I've asked people. Now, actually, I'll ask you, how many people here have a family emergency plan already in place? In other words, everybody in your house knows where to go. They all have numbers to call. You all have. How many people have a go bag that's ready? Oh, well, this is the right. You all came to this workshop because you know. But I guarantee you that when I do this with our members, the number of hands that go up are not nearly enough. You know, there was all kinds of challenges out of this disaster, and this was a particularly bad one, but we don't know what the next one's going to look like. Folks faced lots and lots of challenges where they lived. Actually, that's a challenge I face every day, so that's not particularly new. Actually, I think my car is in there someplace. Obviously, with the transportation systems down, it was even harder for people to respond. So there were a number of lessons that we learned, and they weren't particularly new lessons, and that is employers need to be better prepared, workers need to be better prepared, there needs to be better preparedness when it comes to transportation, and as was mentioned earlier, communications is really a challenge during a disaster. So many employers are expecting to use email and cell phones, and they'll be rudely awakened when they find out that those may not work during a disaster. So we decided to create a program that we think that would sort of try to get ahead of the curve. So we're in the process of creating and have created a lot of it already, a curriculum to train our members. And our goal is to identify at least one or two members in every one of our facilities. And their job as a union resiliency coordinator, and I'll talk a little bit more, is to basically make sure both where they work and their community is better prepared to deal with the next disaster. We have a network of worker trainers, members that have been trained on how to facilitate small group activities, and our goal is to use them as the vehicle to train these union resiliency coordinators. They will do this work, the URCs will do this work both where they live and their community, and we also have a program that we're going to be doing an awareness training for all of our union delegates and all of our stewards. The union resiliency coordinators are going to get a 16-hour curriculum, and the goal is to make them not quite a worker trainer, because our worker trainers go through a 40-hour course, but something more than just someone who's on a health and safety committee. And so they're going to get a variety of skills and knowledge about past disasters, about past lessons learned, and about how to make sure that they can conduct an adequate vulnerability analysis of where they work and where they live, and how they can participate properly in the incident command system to make sure that that system is actually working. We do training all the time around chemical spills and first receiver patient decontamination. Every one of our employers has a plan sitting on a shelf. There's a binder that has the plan, but nobody knows what's in it. And so our goal is to make sure that those plans are real. And it's the same thing for the incident command system. Every employer has something in writing, but that doesn't mean it's real. We've begun this already. We've done work with lots and lots of our nursing homes already. We, as I mentioned, we've done work with our home care workers. We've got the buy-in by NYU, and we're working with our members at Beth Israel Hospitals. We're working with our members in Connecticut, DOT workers, and the Office of Emergency Management up there, and other folks both of our locals in Connecticut. I think this is the disclaimer I'm supposed to put in here, that this is supported by NIEHS, but if I made any mistakes, I'm responsible for it. And thank you for your time.